Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we are continuing this morning in Emirat Hashem with Kapitel Samech Gimel, chapter 63 in Tehillim. Our shir this morning, our series is dedicated by Suri Reiner in loving memory of her mother, Hannah Rachel Bas Binyamin Chaim, her grandmothers, Zvega Bas Yaakov Alevi and Freda Bas Shmuel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. And with that, let us begin. So Kapitel Samech Gimel. David HaMelech begins, Mizmor LeDavid, a song of David, Biyosa B'Midbar Yehuda. When David HaMelech was in Midbar Yehuda. So remember again, already we know from our journeys through Tehillim that different kapitloch, different chapters correspond to different parts of David HaMelech's life, correspond to different events in David HaMelech's life. Sometimes the connection between particular events and the kapitel is clear. Other times it requires a bit more investigation. So again, here, already David HaMelech kind of spells it out for us. When was David HaMelech in Midbar Yehuda? So David HaMelech, remember again, was by Midbar Yehuda a number of different times. But almost all the times that he spent in Midbar Yehuda were all during the period in life where he was running away from his father-in-law, from Shaul. So remember again, a little bit of a refresher. David HaMelech rises from obscurity onto center stage prominence when he's able to kill Goliath. He quickly becomes a trusted servant, a trusted general of David HaMelech, rises through the ranks of the military, marries Shaul's daughter. As that's happening with David, remember again, Shaul's monarchy really begins to unravel. Remember again, specifically, Shaul doesn't follow Shmuel's command, God's command, a number of different times. Most notably, when he was given the charge, he was given the order to annihilate Amalek, and he does not do so. He spares the king, he spares the king's wife, he spares some of the women, some of the lives, he spares. He does something he's not supposed to do. As a result, Amalek is able to perpetuate and move on. At that point in time, Shmuel says to Shaul, "You have now lost the monarchy. You have now lost the monarchy." So as often happens in life, when we do things wrong, so the thing we try to avoid most of us, is personal responsibility. So instead, when something goes wrong in life, the best thing to look for is a scapegoat, right? Nothing like a good old scapegoat, right? Nothing like to find someone who is the real source of your problems, the real source of the issues, instead of taking personal responsibility. Shaul could have easily said, "There's a good reason everything is unraveling. Unfortunately, it's because I've made mistakes." But instead, he chooses not to do that. He chooses not to introspect, but instead he chooses to assign blame to young David. Seeing David as a threat, seeing David as someone who wants to steal the throne from under him. Of course, remember, David HaMelech has zero monarchical aspirations, right? David doesn't want to be king. And by the way, Shaul didn't want to be king either, right? Shaul didn't want it either. Remember again, when Shaul was chosen, the Navi says, right? Shmuel says, "Shaul, where's Shaul? V'nechba ben akelim." He's hiding. He didn't want it. But it's an amazing thing. You see this throughout the Nevi'im, that people, even people who don't want power, when they get power, power becomes very intoxicating. And once you have it, it's very difficult to let go of it. Shaul refuses for, and remember, Shaul was a very righteous man. But even righteous people make dramatic mistakes. So Shaul refuses to accept personal responsibility. Refuses to. And instead puts all of the aggression and anger on David HaMelech. David effectively becomes a fugitive. He will not fight his father-in-law. He will not raise his hand towards another Jew. And so essentially he goes ahead and he's a fugitive. He just wanders. So where does he wander? In a variety of different places. Midbar Yehuda was, you know, whenever I have the privilege to be with my family in Eretz Yisrael, we always try to go to Ein Gedi. Children love it a lot. And I always tell them, like, you look around the mountains of Ein Gedi, and the truth is, it's quite possible that David HaMelech was hiding out in these very caves. Right here, that's Midbar Yehuda. So he's running. Remember, so there are many stories of David HaMelech's life that take place in the location, the geographic location of Midbar Yehuda. So this particular kapitel is one of those kapitlach when David HaMelech was running from Shaul. What point in time, what period? The kapitel doesn't really necessarily have to lend itself to any one particular event, but these are the years in which David HaMelech is running away from Shaul. It's just an interesting aside, by the way, just not our topic, but it is incredible how when you choose not to deal with your own baggage, it doesn't just impact you, but it impacts the people around you also. Shaul won't deal with his baggage. He won't deal with it. He won't deal with whatever the personal failures he has. And so understand what happens. His refusal to deal with his personal failures and shortcomings doesn't just impact him. It ruins his family. He destroys his son-in-law's life. I mean, David HaMelech rebounds, but he destroys it. He destroyed his own daughter's life. Right, Michal? He destroyed his own child's life because he was unwilling to deal with whatever the issues that he is having. So it's incredible. David HaMelech spends years on the run. You know, people think they have difficult in-laws. You know, no matter how difficult your in-laws may be, one thing is clear, they're most probably not trying to kill you, at least not actively, right? But Lamaisa, David HaMelech has to contend with this, right? He literally has to deal with a difficult father-in-law who's ready to kill him. What did I do to you? I've done nothing but serve you dutifully. I've done nothing but give of myself to you, to our country, to our people. What do you want from me? But you see from here, the power of not dealing with your baggage. It's not pleasant. No one likes to deal with their baggage. No one likes, so it's much easier just to project. It's everyone else. The problem is everywhere and everyone else, not me. If you don't deal with your baggage, the baggage comes and often lands on you like a ton of bricks. Poor Shaul dies in battle. He dies in battle, right? And Nebuch, because of his inability to deal with his own personal shortcomings and failures and faults, he destroyed his family. He mamish destroyed his family. David HaMelech was an incredible piece of that collateral damage. It's true, David HaMelech recovers. Michal doesn't recover, right? Other members of the family lose their lives because of Shaul as well. So an incredible lesson. So this kapitel is written when David HaMelech is on the run in Midbar Yehuda. So I like to try to, and you can see that the topic, meaning the theme of the kapitel, is very much reminiscent of kapitel Chav Beis, like we were learning the last few weeks, Chav Beis, Samech Beis, 62, and many of the other kapitel. If you take a look, David HaMelech writes, this is in Pasuk Beis, Elokim, Keiliato, Ashacharecha, Tzomalecha, Nafshi, Kamalecha, B'sari, Be'eretz Siya, Va'ayef B'limayim. O God, you are my God, I seek you, my soul thirsts for you, my flesh longs for you, in an arid and thirsty land without water. David HaMelech describing, you could see, not just the external desert, but also describing an internal desert, his own struggles. Kein bakodesh chazisicha liros uschal kvodecha, kitov chastecha mechaim, svasecha yishab chunucha. And David HaMelech essentially goes on to explain that although I am in the midbar, although I am in the desert, and although my circumstances are so difficult, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're always with me. You're always with me. And the knowledge that you're with me, and the feeling that you're with me, you could skip down a few psukim, he says, Im zechartichah. Look at paragraph, pasuk ches. Ki ayisa ezrasa li uvetzel knafecha aranein. For you are my help, and in the shadow of your wings I shall praise. Dov knafshi acharecha, tkibi tamcha yimincha. My soul has clung after you, your right hand has supported me. And again, David HaMelech goes on to discuss those who seek to undermine him, yet he feels an incredible sense of confidence, optimism, and hope because he always has HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his corner. So the theme of the kapitel is not unique to Samech Gimel. This is a theme that probably is the most dominant and prevalent theme throughout all of Sefer Tehillim. The thematic overtone of, I'm desperate, I'm alone, I feel forsaken, I feel broken, yet I never lose hope because you are always with me. No matter what happens in life, the betrayals of human relationships, the frailties of human relationships, at the end of the day, I will always have you along with me. But what I want to try to explore a little bit this morning is the message of the desert. Because David HaMelech, you know, sometimes, like in Chumash, for example, when you learn Chumash, so Chumash, if you want to learn it critically, you have to analyze every single word. There is no word in Chumash that is extraneous or unnecessary. Every word serves a purpose, every word serves a... And therefore, again, if you really want to understand, you literally have to delve into every single word. Poetry is often not like that, right? Poetry is different. Sometimes poetry is said in a way to convey emotion, to convey meaning, to convey a feeling, but there's not necessarily a deeper meaning in every single specific word. And that's true in Sefer Tehillim. Sometimes David HaMelech will say things in a verbose fashion, just to make a point. Sometimes he'll say it in a succinct fashion, just to make a point. You don't necessarily have to hang on to every single word of David HaMelech. But whenever you see David HaMelech throw in an interesting piece of information like, Biyosa Bamidbar Yehuda, David HaMelech is going out of his way to tell us, I wrote this capital in Midbar Yehuda. I wrote this in the desert. So David HaMelech is trying to tell us something. So I'd like to try to analyze a little bit this morning, is what's the message of the desert? What's the message of the Midbar? What is it that David HaMelech is trying to convey to us? So the truth is, the Mefarshim pick up on this and go in a variety of different directions. If you look at number two, the Medrash Shilim says as follows, Mizmor LeDavid Biyosa Bamidbar Yehuda, Emosai Yisram of Action LaKadosh Baruch Hu. When do Jewish people call out to God? Be'es Tzarasam. When we are in trouble, right? There are no atheists in the foxhole. We all reach out to God when we are in need, when we are in trouble. Now, what's interesting is as follows. See, sometimes when people make this statement, it's made derogatorily, right? Well, when do you reach out to God? When do you reach out to God? Fine, when you need Him, when you need Him. So the truth is, here the Medrash is not saying this as a derogatory statement. David HaMelech is teaching us something about our relationship with Hashem. It is true that it is often human nature that when life is good, you don't reach out to God. That's just human nature, right? When life is good, when things are going well, I quote unquote, don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu as much. Okay, that's human nature. But David HaMelech tells us, but when you are in need, make sure to reach out. There's a concept ultimately of reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Be'is Tzara, in a difficult time. And that doesn't make me a fair weather Jew. And that doesn't make me a fair weather friend. It just makes me what? Human. It just makes me human. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands our nature for one simple reason. He created it and He programmed it. So He understands that human nature is such that when life is good, I often feel autonomous and self-sufficient. And it's only when things really go south, only when things really go badly, that I feel the need to have a support to lean on. So says the Medrash something amazing. Skip down to the last two lines. Afkan, biyosar b'midbar Yehuda, mizmor l'david b'molcho eino omer, el l'biyosar b'midbar Yehuda. Listen to it. Listen to this Medrash. The Medrash says, David HaMelech says, I just want to tell you something. I'm just like the rest of you. I called out to God much more when I was in Midbar Yehuda than I did when I was the king. Isn't that incredible? I called out to God much more when I was on the run than when I was sitting in my palace. Sometimes we think that it's something lacking in us when we only turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in times of need and in times of difficulty. And so David HaMelech comes along in this capital and he says, turn to God whenever you want to. Turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu whenever you feel the need to. And it might be that I should thank God more in times of serenity, in times of blessing, but human nature is such that often I forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu when life is going on autopilot. But when you need Him, always call out to Him, right? It's just like a parent, like a human parent, that what happens, and anyone kind of who has teenage children, I think could appreciate this, or has gone through this period, right? So very often, a conversation with teenage children is, so how was your day? How's your day? And the answer is, fine, right? Anything new? No, right? Your friends, oh yeah. Yeah, any plans? No, right? Monosyllabic, like a conversation like with a caveman, right? Like, right, they're just not beating their chest, you know, communicating, right? So it's very simple. Yet amazingly enough, when does the whole dynamic change? Oh, you know, Mom, I meant to tell you, you look so beautiful, right? It's mamish, like you're reverse aging. It's so great. It's wonderful. By the way, could I have the car, right? Or by the way, could I have this? So sometimes as a parent, you know, it stings a little bit. And you say, really? Like, I try to have a conversation with you and you never communicate. And now you need something so you communicate. And it's true. It's a little bit disingenuous. But then a good parent says, my child's talking to me. I understand it's not because they really want to engage in a deep dialogical process of getting to know each other a little bit. They just want something. But you take what you can get. And the worst thing you could ever do as a parent is to give that speech that goes, oh, now you want to talk to me. Because if you give that speech, they will stop talking to you. And so every parent knows that even when the dialogue is, the underpinning of the dialogue is, I want something, I need something, whenever your child reaches out to you, you say, fantastic, I'd love to talk. And even if it's just a pretext to get something, I'll take it. If it works for our human relationship, David HaMelech says, the same is true with HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. Should I be reaching out to God all the time? And when there's a perfectly calm day, whenever that might happen, right? When there's a day when everything is just fine and okay, should I take a few moments to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for just a very simple, you know, I was having a conversation with someone who was undergoing incredibly difficult life circumstances. And the person said to me, she said to me, Silver Q, just give me a bracha that I should have a boring life. I just want a boring life. That's all. She said, when I was young, I used to think I wanted excitement and I wanted this and I wanted that. Now I realize what I want is boring. I want the same thing day in and day out. And I don't need excitement. I don't need special. Flatline boring is perfect. I said, first of all, I'm not a Rebbe, so I don't give brachas. But even if I gave brachas, there's no such thing as a boring life. Right? That's not to be had in this world. After 120, you have a boring existence. It is what it is. The same day, day in and day out. But this lifetime, I'm sorry?
Maybe.
Maybe.
You don't know.
No, no, no. What I mean is there's a consistency. There's a consistency that's there. Right? I didn't mean to say it's boring. I'm sure it's wonderful. No, I didn't. Right? I'll go on record as the afterlife is incredible. Right? Right? I just meant like a consistency, like day in and day out. But the idea over here, so it would be wonderful to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even when things are calm and tranquil. But just because I don't do that, reach out to your father when you need him. And even if you haven't spoken to him in a while, and even if you haven't reached out for a while, it's not disingenuous to reach out in a time of need. People sometimes feel spiritually or theologically disingenuous. When I only turn to God when I need him, when I only turn to God because I want something, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no different than us. When my child comes to me, and they haven't really had a real deep, meaningful conversation with me for a long time, and then they suddenly want to talk, and I know it's only because they need something, I welcome it with open arms. I welcome it with open arms. And if that's what we do as human parents, Alachas kama vakama, all the more so. HaKadosh Baruch Hu welcomes and waits for our dialogue with him, even if it's just in times of need. That's the lesson David HaMelech is teaching us. I didn't daven as much. It's incredible, right? I didn't daven as much when I was on the throne. I davened much more when I was in Midbar Yehuda. When I was in distress, and we all know this, the best philos in life, let's be honest, the most heartfelt prayers are never when life is good. They're always when life is challenging. The times you feel, you remember those times in life? We've all had those times where you won't put down your Sefer Tehillim, right? I'm going to go everywhere. I'm going to go everywhere. And every minute that I have, I'm going to daven. Every minute that I do, I'm going to put in my Hashem. Every minute. And then what happens? The tzara passes, and so does the fervor. Okay, that's human nature. No one's always on. No one's at the peak of their spirituality. But lest you think that it's disingenuous, well, here's the good news. If I'm disingenuous, David HaMelech is disingenuous also. And David HaMelech wasn't disingenuous. So if it works for him to recognize this idea that sometimes we're most connected when we need something, connection is always beautiful and always wonderful, even if it's utilitarian in nature. If you look at the Al-Sheikh says in number 3, Mizmar David b'yosa b'amidbar, this is so beautiful. He says, Hine mizmar ze yosa David HaMelech, lahoros kama ma'alos tovos lenimsa be'eretz Yisrael. So the Al-Sheikh says that actually, the essence, the message of this capital, is to extol the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. How so? Listen to what he writes. Gam shahaya gola mimakom lemakom. Ki tov lahodos lashem. Ki nasan galuso tachas knafav yisparach be'eretz. Ba'aretz v'lo be'aretz ha'amim. Says the Ashlech so beautifully. Do you know what the message of this capital is? Mizmor le'David. David sang a song. Be'yosef b'midbar Yehuda. So of course, there's an inherent textual contradiction. What's Mizmor le'David means what? Normally, we would assume, what does it mean? What emotional state? Happiness. Right? Midbar Yehuda, right? If somebody told you, I have great news, I'm about to drop you off for 2 months in Midbar Yehuda, what would be your reaction? Right? You must be referring to the Dead Sea Spa, I'm assuming, right? Right? That must be where you're dropping me off. No. But Midbar Yehuda, so what do you mean, Mizmor LeDavid, Midbar Yehuda? They don't go together. David, you're on the run. And now that you're on the run in the desert. The desert is not a simple place to survive in any season. So why are you singing? So the Ashlech says so beautifully, because David HaMelech says, at least I get to be in Eretz Yisrael. And I would rather be a fugitive in the desert in the land of Israel than sit in the most comfortable of palaces, Chutz La'aretz, outside the land. An incredible and beautiful moving idea. Ki tov lehodos l'Hashem, because it's good to praise God. Ki nosan galuso tachas k'nafav yisparach ba'aretz, because if I have to wander, if I have to be exiled, if I have to be on the run, at least I get to do it in Eretz Yisrael. At least I get to have the connection to my land and to my people. V'lo be'aretz ha'amim. Now understand, David HaMelech did have to leave Eretz Yisrael as well. So what he's speaking over here is from a sense of contrast. I've been a fugitive in the land. I've been a fugitive outside of the land. Mizmor leDavid biYosef b'Midbar Yehuda. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be a fugitive in the land and not a fugitive chutz la'aretz, which also yields another incredible lesson, an incredible insight into David HaMelech's personality, which is every difficult and tragic situation always has something positive. Let me clarify this. I don't mean that every tragic circumstance always turns out well. That's not what I mean, because there's a lot of tragedies in life that don't always have a happy ending. But I mean, in any freeze frame in life, there are always things that are challenging, and there are always things that are good. Always. That is always the case. There is always something good in your life, no matter how challenging or trying your circumstances are. What's the great challenge of the human condition? That our focus is often hijacked by the difficulties and by the challenges. And often those become the defining aspects of my existence. So if you ask me how life is, my answer will depend. If I'm having a very challenging day, I'm going to say not so great. But that's not a true answer. Because are there good things in your life even in the most challenging of days? Of course. This, by the way, this you can't argue on this. What I'm telling you, most things, 99% of things that I say, you can absolutely argue with, and you should argue with, right? This is the 1% that you can't argue with. No matter how challenging or difficult your circumstances may be, there is always something positive in your life. Always. Always something. It might be a small thing, right? It might be a relatively small thing. It might be that most of life is difficult, overwhelming, and challenging. And there's only one little thing that's good. It's possible. But there's still one little thing that's good. That's always the case. And therefore, again, the Al-Sheikh says, look, listen to this. David HaMelech has lost everything. When I say everything, you have to understand, you see, we often, when we think about David HaMelech, we say that name with such reverence. Rightfully so. The founding father of a dynastic monarchy. The Alter Zeda of the Mashiach. Everything that we have as a people stems really from like David HaMelech and Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu has gave us the Torah. David HaMelech gave us Mashiach. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us our Olam Hazeh, our ability to cultivate a meaningful life ultimately again through living and learning Torah. And David HaMelech gives us our future with messianic redemption. But you have to understand, he had a ridiculously challenging life. We speak about this all the time. He's on the run. He lost everything. When he's on the run from Shaul, Shaul is not his only problem. He is an enemy of the state. The narrative that Shaul has created is that David is Moreid B'Malchus. David is trying to go ahead and overthrow the king. And remember again, what happens to those who aid and abet David? What happens? So remember, we see, where did it happen? In Nov. right? The city of Nov, David HaMelech goes ahead, and he seeks assistance from the Kohanim in Nov. And what happens? Shaul finds out, they wipe out the entire city. He's all alone. And amazingly enough, can you imagine this? He's sitting probably in a cold, dark cave in the middle of the winter in Ein Gedi, for argument's sake, right? And what does he say? Mizmor leDavid biYosab amidbar Yehuda. At least I have Eretz Yisrael. I don't have my wife. I don't have my mishpacha. I don't have, right, my people. I don't have anything because I'm an enemy of the state. I have nothing. But at least I have Eretz Yisrael. What an incredible way to live life. We always speak about looking for the positive. But the truth is, it's often trivialized, right? And I want to be clear. When you see that looking for the positive, it doesn't mean looking for the silver lining in your circumstances. Because sometimes circumstances don't always have a silver lining. Sometimes things are just difficult and they just are what they are. And you know what? Sometimes there's a reality that I don't even see a way in which they're going to get better. This is just what it is. But that's one chelik of my life. That's one piece. What about the stuff that is good? What about the things that are beautiful? What about the things that are working? And so life just becomes a choice about what do you want to focus on. And it doesn't mean focusing on the good to the exclusion of the challenges. We all know if you have challenges in life, even if you try to ignore them, you can't ignore them because they're always there. It's a question of what frames your life outlook. Are you a person whose life is simply defined by the challenges you have, and that's it? You're a challenged person, you have a difficult life, or is your life balanced in that, yes, I have challenges, but Baruch Hashem, there's also some great things also. The great things don't counterbalance the challenges, and the great things don't even eliminate the challenges, and they don't even minimize the pain of the challenges. But there's still good things here. David HaMelech has much pain, much adversity, much difficulty, but I have Eretz Yisrael. I get to be in the land. It could be worse. I could be running as a fugitive outside of Eretz Yisrael. With everything going on, at least I have my land. Let's go on. Take a look at number four. Actually, let's move forward a little bit. Let's go to number six. So the Al-Sheikh of the Malbim gives some additional interpretations as well. But let's take a look at number six. So what I want to draw your attention to over here is this Midbar. I was very intrigued by David HaMelech. So again, we now begin to see, based on the Medrash and based on the Al-Sheikh, based on both of them, ultimately, again, the impact and the importance of the Midbar. So it's not by accident that David HaMelech is choosing to tell us where he was. Yes, what it's doing for us is allowing us, the reader, to connect the kapitel to a particular chapter of David HaMelech's life, which is helpful, because it's always, just by the way, in general, we often don't do this for whatever the reason. But like even when you learn Torah, you learn Tanakh with Mefarshim, with commentaries, it's always very helpful to understand the historical background of the commentaries, because people often see things through the lens in the times of which they live in. So I'll give you a simple example. Just like a simple example, Rashi HaKadosh, when they're talking about the Big Day Kahuna, speaks about the Ephod. The Ephod was one of the Kohanic vestments. They translate it as an apron. But the truth is, it's not really like an apron that we think of. So how does Rashi define it? Rashi says, by the way, it's like the outer garment that the French girls wear. Yeah, like, thanks a lot, Rashi. Right, fantastic. Right? But understand how profound that is. What Rashi is saying is, okay, I live in the 1100s in France. Right? I live in Troyes, France. So now I want to tell you, based on where we live, this is how I envision this particular garment. It's incredibly bright. You see this all the time, where Mefarshim understand different things through the lens and the times in which they are living. Obviously, Rashi also wrote with Ruach HaKodesh. So it's a different type of commentary. I'm just pointing out sometimes. So it's helpful for us to understand when this kapitel was written, because it gives us a bit more context. But again, the message of the desert, the Medrash telling us, call out to God whenever you can. The Al-Sheikh telling us, at least I have Eretz Yisrael. So don't define your life by your challenges. Don't define your life by that which is broken. Don't define your circumstances by that which is not going well. Just always remember to keep an eye out for that which is good. But let's focus on the desert. Take a look at number six. I want to take you to a totally different topic for just a moment. Last week's parsha. So the Torah says this also. Actually, this is the second week in a row we're going to speak about Hagar. So I don't know why, but the whole Hagar narrative has really grabbed my attention this year with Avram. And last week we spoke about Sarai and Hagar's issues. So look at number 6. So number 6 is a little bit of a continuation of the story from last week. The pasuk says, remember again, this week we're picking up in a different part of the story. Yitzchak has already been born. Right, Yitzchak was born, Mazel Tov, Avram and Sarah brought a child into this world. So what happens? Sarah says to Avram Avinu, we can't have Yishmael here. Right, we can't have Yishmael. So what happens? So this is where the pasuk picks up. Vayashkim Avram baboker, vayikach lechem mechim asmayim. Avram woke up in the morning. He took some bread, water, vayitein el Hagar, samal shichma, ve'es hayeled, vayishalcheha, vatelech, vatesu bamidbar be'er sheva. So what happens? Avram Avinu says, okay, can't raise Yishmael in the same home as Yitzchak. Sends Yishmael and Hagar away. Avram packs up some provisions for Hagar and Yishmael. And they go off ultimately again into the desert. Into the desert. So says, the pasuk says, Vayichlu amayim min achema. So what happens? They quickly exhausted the supplies, right? So they finished the water, they finished the bread. And what happens? Vatashleich es hayele tachas achad hasichim. So Hagar goes ahead, literally translated, she cast the child under one of the bushes. So Yishmael, as we're going to see, is dying. Yishmael is dying. So Hagar places him. By the way, cast doesn't mean she threw him, right? Cast means she placed him. Remember again, why is she placing him under the bushes? Shade. Remember, one of the most important things is when we often learn Bereshit stories, we have a list of the good guys and the bad guys, right? And Hagar is often on the bad guys list. And that is unequivocally false. Hagar is not on the bad guys list, right? Hagar is a mother, right? Hagar, remember, let's just point out, it wasn't Hagar's idea to marry Avram, right? It was Sarai's idea for Hagar to marry Avram. Hagar was a maidservant. She listened to her mistress. She did what she was supposed to do. She's now being expelled from the Abrahamic home. She's with her child. Her child is dying. So what happens? So first she places him under the bushes. So remember, forget about the rest of the story for now. On a simple level, they're in the desert. There's not a lot of shade in the desert. In fact, interestingly enough, the sichim are often translated as juniper bushes. We'll see that in just a little bit. She gives him some cover from the sunlight. What happens? Now afterwards, Vatelech Vateshev La Mineged Herchek Kimitachave Kashas. And by the way, just so you know, just how do you know that? This is very important. How do you know Hagar is not one of the bad guys? How do you know that? Because remember, again, at the end of this week's parasha, Sarah Iminu dies at the beginning of the parasha. And the end of the parasha is Vayosef Ish Vayikach Isho Shma Kitura. Avram remarries after Sarah's death. He marries a woman, her name is Keturah. Says Rashi, we never heard of Keturah. Who's Keturah? Rashi says, Hagar. So isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing that after Sarah Imenu's death, Avram gets remarried and he remarries Hagar. He would not have remarried Hagar if she was a bad woman. So this is very important to understand the narrative of the story. So what happens? So Yishmael is underneath the bushes. Underneath the bushes. Vatelech vateshev lo mineged herche kimetacha vekeshes. So what happens? She went and she sat down from afar at about the distance of 2 bow shots. So now something dramatic happens. Her placement of Yishmael underneath the bushes in and of itself is not dramatic. Right? Yishmael's sick. Yishmael's dying. He's dying, as we're going to see in just a moment. So she puts him under shade. What happens now is dramatic. She moves away. She moves away. Why does she move away? Ki amra, al era b'mos hayeled. I cannot watch the death of my child. Vatoshev mineged, vatisa es kola vatevch. She says, I can't watch my son die. I can't watch. I just want to point out, this does not make her a cruel an unfeeling mother. Some people handle tragedy and adversity in different ways. Some people could hold the hand of their loved one until their last breath, and some people can't be there. It's just, we're wired emotionally in different ways. So what does Hagar do? She makes sure that her son is as comfortable as he can be, underneath the bushes, protected from the sun. As she's watching her son die in the desert, she says, you know what? I can't do this. So she moves away. And by the way, interestingly enough, the Medrash points out she moved at different intervals. At first, she was a little bit far away, and then she kept moving further back. Why? Al ereb emos hayeled. I can't see my son die. So the Medrash also points out that Yishmael was crying. And she said, I can't hear it. I can't, there's nothing I can do. I can't fix this situation. And so I can't be there to, and what does she do? She sits down at a distance and she cries. It's one of the most tragic events that you see in Chumash, right? We often read through it because again, we're like, Haggai Yishmael, the bad guys, right? So again, there's not too much empathy usually with this particular episode. But Hagar is a mother who's watching her child die, is powerless to stop it, cannot go ahead and sit there and watch it, and so she moves back. So she says something amazing. So in terms of trying to understand what exactly is unfolding over here, why is it that at the end of the day, see this, and where is all this unfolding? Where is it all happening? It's happening in the Midbar. Once again, it's happening in the desert. So the Mefarshim point out number 7, number 8, the Radak says, "Vatashlech es hayeled, hishlichaso mechika shaiso nosas also." So the Radak says, by the way, when the pasuk is "Vatashlech es hayeled," literally, we translate it as "she cast," means she placed, she was holding him, she was holding him. Now understand, Yishmael is not a baby, right? Yishmael is a young man already. Hagar, I don't know how old she was, right? But she's carrying, like her, I don't know, either teenage son or young adult son, she's carrying him. She can't carry him anymore. He's too heavy for him to carry. So she places him down. Yishmael was tired, right? He was tired. He was exhausted from thirst. The water was gone from thirst and from the journey. The Malbim says in number 8, Vatashlech. So says the Malbim something amazing. Me'inyan aziva v'yeyosh. What happened over here, says the Malbim. Yeyosh. Yeyosh means what? Despair. Hagar gave up. She gave up. She gave up. There's nothing for me to do. I can't help these circumstances. So the only thing I can do, the only thing I can do is to make my son comfortable, give him shade. I have no water to give him. I have nothing. Yeyosh. So says the Malbim, at first she puts herself at a little bit of a distance. I can't watch this happen. What's the problem? She still hears him crying. So she moves back even further because she simply can't bear to watch what it is that's unfolding. Keep that event in your mind for just a moment. Take a look at number 12. Another desert story. Take a look. This is Malachim Aleph. Vayagid Achav li'izevel es kol asher asa Elio ve'es kol asher harag es kol hanaviim b'cheref. So listen to this. So now, just to give you a little bit of context. Achav. You know, I guess Achav is one of the bad guys. But even Achav, I just want to point out, even Achav had rigshei tshuva. There were times that he wanted to do tshuva. Who stamped out those feelings of tshuva? His wife. Now, I'm not going to blame it on the wife, chas v'shalom, right? It'd be too dangerous for me to do that over here, right? But but the metzias as such, Izebel, unfortunately, is a terribly evil woman who was more interested in her husband's power than in the good and health, and spiritual health of her husband. And so every moment that Achav is ready to turn back, Izebel stamps out the spark of tshuva. So what happens? Here, Achav tells Izebel, "Eis kol asher asa Eliyahu, eis kol asher harag, eis kol neviim b'cheref." So what happens? Achav and Izebel hatched an incredible plan. It was Izebel's idea, and Achav is only too willing to comply. Let's kill out the prophets. Because if you kill out the prophets, right, the prophets are a threat to our power. The prophets are always trying to bring the Jewish people back to God. Remember again, Achav is the king over Malchus Yisrael. So remember again, the kingdom of Chal Yisrael split into two. This is under Shlomo's son Rechavam. The kingdom splits into two. There's Malchus Yehuda and there's Malchus Yisrael. The danger to Malchus Yisrael always was the Beis HaMikdash. Because remember again, there's only one Beis HaMikdash. So if the Jews from the kingdom of Israel go to the Beis HaMikdash, it's only a matter of time until they rally around the king of Malchus Yehuda. So already Yeravam ben Nevat has an incredible idea. What does he do? He creates golden calves. And he says, you don't have to go to Yerushalayim anymore. I'm saving you the trip. Now, I remember initially, the golden calves were not idolatrous. The calves that Yeravam ben Nevat built were supposed to be essentially a satellite site of the Beis HaMikdash. Worship God. You just don't have to go all the way to Yerushalayim. Of course, it quickly descends and it evolves into idolatry. So here, Achav continuing on this, says, we have to kill the prophets. We have to kill the prophets. If we don't kill the prophets, they're going to bring the Jewish people back to God, and that's a threat to our power. So they begin killing our prophets. Elio, together with Ovadia, was able to save a whole group of prophets. Fine. So Achav tells Izebel what Elio was doing. Pasuk Beis. Vatishlach Izebel malach el Elio lemor. Ko yasun elokim v'ko yosifon ki ka'es machar asimes nafshicha kin nefesh echamim. So this is incredible. Izebel sends a message to Elio Hanavi. And she says to him, by this time tomorrow, you are a dead man. Imagine, this is what's happening. You know, somebody once remarked to me, we always say, Chadei Shameinu Kikadem. Right? Take us back to the times of old. Right? So, by the way, we often have this very rosy picture about what life was like when the Beis HaMikdash stood. It wasn't so posh, right? Remember, again, there were incredible times, but there were also very rocky times. So, literally, Izebel, right? Izebel, the queen, is telling Elio Hanavi, by this time tomorrow, you are a dead man. So what happens? Vayar, so of course, Elio becomes fearful. Vayokam vayelech al nafsho, vayovo be'er shev asher li Yehuda, vayonach es na'arosham, v'holoch b'midbar derech yom. So what happens? Elio goes ahead, and where does he go to? Where does he go to? The desert. He goes to the desert. Vayavo vayishev tachas rosem achad. He sits underneath the rosem. Here, the targum for rosem is sichim. Here, it's a juniper tree. Vayishal es nafsho lamos. So, do you see what's happening over here? Do you understand the parallelism? So Elio goes. Where does he sit down? He sits down underneath what? Underneath what? Achas hasichim. Underneath one of the bushes, just a different word used, rosem. I skipped a couple of sources, but remember, it's the same type of tree. The Medrash and the Gemara identify that the siach, the bush that Yishmael sat was laying down underneath, was a rosem bush. Same type of bush, same location, same desert. And now Elio is sitting down underneath the rosem bush. And what does he say when he's sitting underneath the sichim? Vayishal es nafsho lamos. What does Elio say to God? I'm done. Take me. I want to die. By the way, you don't hear this. Moshe Rabbeinu often says, what do I need this for? Right? Many Jewish leaders say that, right? What do I need this for? Right? But even Moshe Rabbeinu in his most exasperated moment never says to God, take me. Never says to God, take me. Elio has reached a level where he says, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Vayishal es nafsho lamos. Vayomer, Rav atu Hashem, kach nafshi. Take my soul. Kilo tov anochi me'avosai. I am no better than my forefathers. So Elio wants to die. He wants that. He asks Kodesh Baruch Hu, please, I'm done. I'm tired of living. And the Medrash themselves go through a whole variety of different things. What was he saying? The Radak says he was scared for his life. I'd rather die at the hand of God than at the hand of Izebel. The Rabag says that he was dying from starvation and dehydration. And it was such a slow, painful death that he says to God, just take me. Spare me the suffering. The Malbim says that Elio said, you know what? I feel like I've done my mission on this world. I feel like I'm done. Sometimes people are just finished living. They're okay with leaving this world. They feel like they've done what they needed to do and they're ready to move on. So Elio Navi says, I'm ready. Kachas nafshi. Please take me. What happens? Last pasuk, number 12. Last pasuk, pasuk hey. Vayishkaf, he falls asleep. Vayishan tachas rosem echad. He falls asleep underneath the rosem, underneath the juniper, right? Underneath the sichim, underneath the bush. And what happens? Vihine ze malach nogeavo. An angel comes and taps him. Vayomer lo, kum echol. And the angel says, come, get up and eat. And the rest of the conversation then goes on between Elio HaNavi and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Elio HaNavi once again, it's not your time. You still have what you have to accomplish. You still have what you have to do. You cannot leave this world just yet. But the parallelism is incredible. So you see the connection over here. It's almost like the same event playing out with two different people. Granted, there are differences. Yishmael is lying underneath the rosem, underneath the siach, underneath the bush, and dying, and dying. And by the way, according to the Malbim, crying. What is he crying for? Maybe he's crying for his mother. Maybe he's crying for HaKadosh Baruch Hu just to end his life because he can't take the suffering. Eliyahu HaNavi is in the Midbar. He's in the desert. He's in the desert, right? And what is he asking for? He also lays down underneath the bush. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm done. I'm just done. I'm done. Please take my life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes and says, no, not yet. So what's happening over here? What is this dynamic of the Midbar? So remember again, three common denominators we have over here. We've got the Midbar, the bushes, and a lying down ready to die. One more piece and I'll bring it all together. If you take a look at number 18. I think we skipped. Is there a 17 missing on your sheet? There is a 17. Okay, good. Sorry, I have a different note. Good. So take a look at number 17 is Drashas Chachamim. Is that the source? Good. So take a look at this for just a moment. Actually, you know what? Go back to 16 for just a moment. I'm sorry. There's an amazing Gemara. I'm telling you this outside just because of time. There's an incredible Gemara. It's the Gemara of Choni HaMa'agel. Everyone knows the story of Choni the circle drawer. Right? It's the Gemara Maseches Tainis. What happened with Choni? So remember again, Choni was an incredible tzaddik, a very righteous man. And it was known that he had an incredible koach hatfil, an incredible power of prayer. So what would happen? Every time there was a drought and they needed rain, the rabbis would dispatch some of the Talmidei Chum from the Beis Medrash to go to Choni, ask him to daven for rain. So good. So that's the story we know, right? That Choni, there was too much rain, too little rain. That's the Choni story. Right after that story, there's another dramatic story. Choni's walking around. Choni was always bothered by, I'm going to give you kind of like the Cliff Notes version of this. Choni was always bothered by the pasuk that says, Shiramalus b'shuva Hashem Hashiva Sion Hayinu Kechomim. A song of ascents, right? When God returns us to Tzion, we'll be like dreamers. That pasuk is specifically referring to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. There were 70 years in between the first and second temples. So Choni always wondered, how could it be that a person would dream for 70 years? I give me a 70-year dream. He said, who sleeps for 70 years? So first of all, Choni obviously didn't know a lot of people because there are plenty of people that sleep for 70 years. In fact, most people sleep through 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, and very often only wake up to life all the way at the very, very, very end. So Choni wondered, how could it be somebody? So what happens? So look at number 16. 16 is the Gemara? Is that the right version? Good. Take a look at 16. So the Gemara says, skip down a little bit. Yom Achad, second line. Yom Achad hava azal b'orcha. One day Choni HaMa'agil is going ahead and he's walking on the road. Chazei lehu gavra d'havanata charuva. He saw a man planting a carob tree. A carob tree, you know this story. Amalei, hi ad kamash nintan. How long does it take for a carob tree to bear fruit? The man said, 70 years. So the man says, the choni says to the man, so I don't understand. You think you're going to get to, you know, spring chicken. You think you're planting it now. Why do you think you're going to get to reap the fruit from that tree? To which the man so profoundly says, this man, referring to himself, came into a world with carob trees, and I will leave a world with carob trees. Which was another way of saying, you know, my father planted carob trees for me. I'll plant carob trees for my children. Okay? Make a long story short, Choni falls asleep. How long does he fall asleep for? 70 years. He wakes up, he sees a man going ahead and picking off the carobs from the tree. So Choni says, what happened over here? The tree grew so fast. To which the man says, what are you talking about? He says, aren't you the man who planted the tree? To which the man responds, I'm the grandson of the man who planted the tree. So there's a whole bunch of pieces to the story. We're going to fast forward to the end of the story. So the Gemara says, Azul Beis Medrash, last few lines in number 16. Choni walks into the Beis Medrash. Shaminu l'rabbanan deka'amri, nihirin shmaisesin kivshani choni ama'agel. So he hears the rabbis talking to the Beis Medrash, and they're saying, you know what? That these teachings are so clear, like they were in the days of choni ama'agel. So what happens? So what happens? Because whenever Choni would enter into the Beis Medrash, any outstanding questions he would always answer. Choni says, Ananinhu, it's me. It's Choni. So of course, again, somebody showed, remember, they thought Choni Ma'aga was dead. He goes missing for 7 years. People just assume he just died. Whatever happened, happened. He says, it's me, it's Choni. V'lo haminu. They, of course, would not believe him. They didn't honor him. They didn't respect him. They thought he was crazy. They thought he was just an insane guy. Chalash daite. He became very upset and depressed. He asked for God to take his life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted his request and took his life. Amar Rava. Rava said, Hainu da'amri inshi. This episode gave birth to the famous adage, O Chavrusa, O Mitusa. Which literally translated means, give me friends or give me death. Give me friends or give me death. So what does this mean? If you take a look at number 17, in the Sefer Drashas Chachamim, if you look all the way at the end, he says over here, Im kein, mipnei ma lo nagu bo kavir kifi ma shahayu raylo, nira lo lomar shazem mipnei shalo haya ben doram. Ki yishmechra, so I'm going to say this outside. The Drashas Chachamim says, what's happening over here? What's going on in this story? That Choni says, O Chavrusa, O Mitusa? What if you don't have friends? First of all, not everybody has friends. Not everybody has friends. What does it mean, give me friends or give me death? I didn't say maybe give me liberty. Or give me friends or give me death? What does that mean? So Josh Chum says something so beautiful. What was Choni HaMa'agil suffering from? He was suffering from profound loneliness. And loneliness is an unsustainable state. A lonely person cannot bear life. You want to give me trials and tribulations. You want to give me difficulties. You want to give me overwhelming circumstances. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us more resilience and more koach than we ever knew we had. But the one piece of the human condition that is almost impossible to live with long term is loneliness. And so when Choni HaMa'agil sees that at the end of the day, he is alone in this world. His family has moved on. His colleagues are long gone. You know, what's interesting is you would have thought, you know, what's missing in this story? Of Choni HaMa'agil, and he walks into the Beis Medrash. What do they think he was? Who do they think he was? What? Who do they think he was? A crazy guy. There are crazy people all over the place. It doesn't mean that you don't engage them. And it doesn't mean that you don't give them a shalom aleichem. And it doesn't mean that you don't offer them a cup of coffee or a place to sit down. Or it doesn't mean that you don't ask them to tell you the story. No one engaged Choni. No one even said, oh really, Choni HaMa'agil, why don't you come over here, right? We all have people who walk around life with grandiose visions of who they are. And sometimes you just have to entertain those visions a little bit and go with it. So it's fine, Choni HaMa'agil, wonderful, back from the dead, right? Why don't you tell us a couple of stories from your youth? No one even engages him. So what happens to Choni HaMa'agil? He's sitting in the corner of the Beis Medrash, derided, chastened. He's alone. There's a profound loneliness that's there. So it turns to Hashem Baruch Hu, you know what? A lonely life is unsustainable. O Chavrusa, O Mitusa. If no one's going to engage me, and I'm going to live out the remainder of my life all alone, I can't bear the loneliness of this world. You know, Rabbi Soloveitchik writes about this in number 18 on your sheet. And Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote a book, this is really a long essay, called Lonely Man of Faith, which is absolutely incredible, but I just want to point out to you the beginning of it. He says, the nature of the dilemma, I'm kind of picking up with these, or all in the beginning. The nature of the dilemma can be stated in a three-word sentence. I am lonely. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik writing. I am lonely. Let me emphasize, however, that by stating I am lonely, I do not intend to convey to you the impression that I am alone. I thank God do enjoy the love and friendship of many people. I meet people, talk, preach, argue, reason. I am surrounded by comrades and acquaintances. And yet, companionship and friendship do not alleviate the passional experience of loneliness, which trails me constantly. I am lonely because at times I feel rejected and thrust away by everybody, not excluding my most intimate friends. And the words of the psalmist David HaMelech, Ki avi v'imi azavuni, my mother and father have forsaken me, ring quite often in my ears like the plaintive cooing of the turtle dove. You need a dictionary a little bit, but it's beautiful. It is a strange, alas, absurd experience engendering sharp, enervating pain as well as stimulating cathartic feeling. I despair because I am lonely and hence feel frustrated. On the other hand, I also feel invigorated because this very experience of loneliness presses everything in me into the service of God. What's on, so Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Soloveitchik goes on and describes this, and this is an incredible idea. We all experience periods of loneliness. We all experience periods where you could be surrounded by people, yet you feel profoundly lonely. Why? Because no one understands me. This happens all the time when people undergo trauma in life. And when I say trauma, there are different forms of trauma. Trauma doesn't just have to mean something as severe as loss or abuse, but trauma means every person undergoes trauma in their own way. And when you undergo a traumatic experience, I often feel alone because your life is fine and your smiles and you're good and you're happy, but I'm not. And you can't understand me. And even if you want to say you're there for me or you're happy to help, I'm all alone with myself because no one understands me in life. And now we begin to understand ultimately what's happening in the Midbar. What's the Midbar? The Midbar is essentially the geographic metaphor for loneliness. The Midbar is empty. The Midbar is devoid of everything. The Midbar is the geographic representation. It's the wasteland of loneliness. And now so we begin to understand. Eliyahu HaNavi has just been told by Izebel, you're dead. You're a dead man. Who's coming to Eliyahu HaNavi's aid? Who's coming to his aid? Who's coming to his aid? No one. Because at the end of the day, they're afraid of Izebel also. And because at the end of the day, most people are not going to put their necks out on the line for you. That's just human nature. Even the best of friends will be there as long as it doesn't require too much of them. It's just human nature. So where does Eliyahu HaNavi go? To the Midbar. I'm all alone in this world. And if I'm all alone in this world, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want it anymore. Just like Choni HaMa'agel. Choni's also all alone. Choni's Midbar, Choni's desert, was the Beis Medrash. So Choni's desert says, I don't want this. If it's a life of solitude and a life of loneliness, I don't want it anymore. Take me. Eliyahu HaNavi in the desert, if this is it, if it's just me alone, Kadosh Baruch Hu, if it's just me and you, let me come to you. Then take me out of this world. Let me stop struggling and let me come. Hagar, what happens with Hagar? She's also in the Midbar. Hagar is all alone. The father of her child has cast her out of the house. Her former mistress no longer wants any relationship with her. Her child is dying, and she is powerless to do anything about it. So amazing enough, what does Hagar do? What does Hagar do? Hagar compounds her loneliness by doing what? Moving away even further. At least, see, when she was with Yishmael, they were lonely together. What she does now in the Midbar of loneliness, loneliness is an incredibly isolating feeling. Hagar gives up. Yishmael gives up. I have to understand, what did Hagar think was going to happen when she moved away from Yishmael? What was going to happen? Let's play the events. What was going to happen in Hagar's mind? What was going to happen? Yishmael would die, and then what? And then she would die. It's not like she was going anywhere. She also got comfortable. This is my last place in this world. Hagar, because you know why? I'm alone. I'm alone in this world. There's no one here for me. There's no one to take care of me. There's no one to love me. I can't even do anything for the ones who I love most, for my own child. I'm helpless in this situation. He's alone. I'm alone. And she makes herself even lonelier by retreating to a different corner. This is the common theme in all of these stories. Choni HaMa'agel, Eliyahu HaNavi, Hagar, all going into the desert of loneliness. Because they feel so profoundly forsaken and alone. So how do you deal with the loneliness of life? So watch this. Take a look at number 20. Or is it number 19 on your sheet? Bereshis. Okay, so my number is off. Number 19. Take a look at number 19. So what happens? So this is, remember, Hagar, Ishmael's dying underneath the bush. Hagar goes ahead and Hagar is a distance. Vayishma lukim es kalanar. The Balach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hears Yishmael crying out. Vayikra malach Elokim el Hagar min hashamayim. An angel of God calls out to Hagar. So another, by the way, another proof, Hagar's not one of the bad guys. I don't know about you, I've never had a malach talk to me. Right? So again, Hagar speaking to malach, and this is not the first time, by the way. She spoke to malachim a number of times before. So what happens? The malach says to Hagar, malach Hagar. What a ridiculously strange conversation. You know what, we know what malach Hagar means? What's troubling you, Hagar? Right? What's wrong? What? What? Malach Hagar, what's up, Hagar? What's wrong? What's ailing you? Al tiri, don't be afraid. Kishama Hashem Kishama Elokim es kol ha'nar b'asher sham. Number one, don't worry. Yishmael's going to be okay. Yishmael's going to be okay. But Hagar, Yishmael's not the only challenged one here. You also feel profoundly alone and profoundly forsaken. So what are we going to do about you, Hagar? So look what the Malach says. Kumi si'ias hanar. Lift up the child. V'achaziki bo es yadech. And ultimately, again, and grasp your hand upon him. Ki l'goy gadol asimenu. Because at the end of the day, I will make you into a great nation. And the Sfarim HaKidoshim, Hasidic literature, explains this pasuk as something amazing. You know what the Malach was saying to Hagar? You are alone. You are alone. And in this moment, you have to make a decision. Are you going to let the loneliness break you? Or are you going to transcend it? And if you want to transcend it, here's what I suggest. Kumi si'ies hana'ar. The Baal Shem Tov explains so beautifully. Go and grab on to your inner child. Pick up the child. Each of us has that child inside of us. That child that is filled with optimism. That child that is filled with hope. That child that is filled with koach. Find your inner nar. V'chaziki es yadech bo. Hold on to that child. And if you do, ki l'goy gadol asimenu. You will become something great. What the Malach says to Hagar is right now in this moment, as you are sitting a little further distance away from your dying son. Your son's going to be okay. That's number one. But now you have to make a decision. Yes, Hagar, I am affirming, I am empathizing. You are alone in this world. So what do you want to do now? Do you want me to take your life? Do you want it all to end over here? Or are you willing to reach inside of yourself and find the kochos that you have to make your life better? To find the meaning in your existence, even though it's difficult. Your life is not going to be easy. It's then, remember again, Hagar is a single mother. Hagar is a single mother. That's already an incredible challenge. Incredible challenge. So the Malach is saying, but you have a choice. You could go ahead and lose yourself in your loneliness, or you could look inside yourself to find the kochos you possess and try to make for yourself and your child something magnificent out of life. Look what happens in number 21. Vayifkach Elokim Yaseinah. So the Shparuch opened her eyes. Vateira be'er mayim. And what does she see standing right in front of her? A well of water. Vateilech vatemale esachom es mayim vateishkes hanar. She goes ahead and she filled up the flask with water and she gave Yishmael to drink. Writes the Sasem, this is number 24, something amazing. Diso medrash vayifkach Elokim Yaseinah vateira be'er mayim mikan. Shakol becheskas sumin ad shakodish baruch hu meir einayim. It's 23, sorry. The Sasema says that from here you see something amazing. Quotes the Medrash, everyone is blind until God gives you sight. What does that mean? Sasema's Gei Rebbe says, laharos, ki kol anitzrach la'adam omed lafanav. Everything you need in life is right in front of you. Do you know what the Sasema is saying? This is amazing. The well was there the whole time. The well was there the whole time. But Hagar was so consumed by her loneliness. She was so consumed by her life sadness. She was so consumed by the difficulties of her circumstances that she couldn't see the well right in front of her. You could have saved your son even before the Malach intervened. You could have hydrated even before the Malach intervened. But when the loneliness is so overwhelming, when the challenges are so overwhelming, you can't even see the nourishing well that is sitting right in front of you. Everything you need in life is right in front of you. The challenge in life is opening your eyes. Because too often in life, we go through life with our eyes shut. Overwhelmed by the enormity of our circumstances, I can't bear to look anymore. So I just close my eyes. But when I close my eyes, I fail to see the well of salvation that's sitting right in front of me. This was the lesson of David HaMelech. Mizmor leDavid, biyosa bamidbar Yehuda. Sometimes life is incredibly lonely. Incredibly. And we all go through periods of loneliness. Rabbi Soloveitchik makes this distinction between loneliness and being alone. We're in a room filled with wonderful people. None of us are alone. But many of us may still be lonely. Loneliness is an inner feeling where no one understands me. No one's here for me. It's just me. It's just me. So how do you deal with the loneliness of life? How do you deal with the loneliness of life? So essentially, we emerge from here. With this, I'll conclude with two lessons. See, David HaMelech answers it differently than Hagar in the capital. David HaMelech says, loneliness, who's lonely? There's always HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no such thing as life loneliness, because even if you look back at number one for just a moment, David HaMelech says in Pasuk Tes, Davka nafshi acharecha, ki tamcha yiminecha. My soul has clung after you. So David HaMelech says, I'm not lonely. I've never been lonely. And I never will be lonely. For one simple reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have you. I'm never alone and I'm never lonely. Because I know no matter how difficult life becomes, you are always with me. Hagar, that's one way to combat life loneliness. You're not really lonely. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with you. And even in those moments where you feel a little bit lonely, look for God in your life. And the moment that you find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life, you will realize that the loneliness is not true. You're not really lonely. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always by your side. Hagar teaches us something else. That in those moments of life loneliness, or the Malach teaches us something else, that in those moments of life loneliness, when you feel like Choni HaMa'agel, or Chavrusa Omitusa, when you feel like Eliyahu HaNavi, who's just done with everything, Kumi HaChaziki, Kumi Si'iyas HaNar, sometimes you have to rediscover the Kochos you have inside. Each of us are more powerful than we give ourselves credit for. And each of us has emotional and spiritual reserves that we have not yet even begun to tap into. Each of us has strength that we have not even begun to realize. And each of us has abilities that we are yet unaware of. In those moments of loneliness, Kumi Si'iyas HaNar, look inside yourself. Try to find the kohos that exist inside you. Try to recapture a sense of optimism. Try to recapture a youthful sense of hope. Try to stop looking at life always in the darkest way. And try to find for yourself some glimmers of light. And if you do that, you will become something great. And more than that, when you search inside yourself and find your inner nar, find your inner child, discover your inner kohos, your inner abilities, something amazing happens. Vayifkach Elokim Eseinah, Vateira Be'er Mayim. I begin to see life is not as bad as I thought. And life is not as lonely as I thought. Because there are wells of salvation, wells of divine assistance, and wells of divine love all around me. We'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emeras Hashem Chaf Dalet next week.
This one again.
Thank you.